I am Ryan Ballengee, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you here with us. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. You can check us out on our website, thegolfnewsnet.com. You can find this podcast on iTunes with the TuneIn Radio app, program.fm, Stitcher, Spreaker, and of course, our website, golfnewsnet.com. As well, Golf News Net Radio's on-demand site, golfnewsradio.com. Thanks if you subscribe through any of those means or you're just playing the show through an MP3 player. Please check out Golf News Net Radio, which is our 24/7 stream of golf talk that's available through our website, golfnewsradio.com, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. You can also find me on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com and golf and facebook.com/golfnewsnet, and me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee. This was a tough week in golf. It really was a tough week. Mr. Charlie Sifford died at the age of 92 in Cleveland. He'd been battling pneumonia and infection. And then a few days later, Mr. Billy Casper died. And for me, Billy's death, Mr. Casper's death, was an even more heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching loss. I never met Charlie Sifford. I have some semblance of understanding of what he accomplished by breaking golf's color barrier in 1961, winning twice on the PGA Tour, and winning senior events, including a senior major. But for me, Mr. Casper's death rang a personal tone and really struck me at my core. And I think that's kind of strange to say and admit that I feel that way, because I've probably spent less than 4 hours of my life with Billy Casper. And his life had so much more meaning than 4 hours with me, and mine has so much more to do than 4 hours with him. But in those 4 hours, I felt really lucky to have spent some time with a guy who's not only an incredible champion, but an incredible family man, and a guy who figured out along the way a path for him that made him great and feel rewarded and feel like he lived his life to the fullest in 83 years, which pretty much any one of us would gladly take on this earth, not knowing what's on the other side. Even if you're sure of what's on the other side, you take those 83 years. Just to recap, 51 PGA Tour titles, 7th all time. And as an aside, Mr. Casper, I'm sure, is happy to know that he died with more PGA Tour wins than Phil Mickelson, a guy he doesn't particularly care for, or didn't care for. 3 major championships, the 1959 and 1966 U.S. Opens, and any man who wins an Open at Wingfoot deserves a special piece of credit, as he did in 66. He won the 1970 Masters over childhood golf rival and friend Gene Lidler. He finished 2nd 3 times in the PGA Championship. And had he played the Open Championship more often, had it been conducive to golf scheduling as it is today, with everything lined up so nicely, I am certain he would have won that as well. But that's not what I think about when I think about Billy Casper. I think about the time that I had a chance to spend with him. And the first time I ever met Billy Casper was in January 2014. And I met him just a few weeks, really, after I had become an official employee for Billy Casper Golf. I had been working as a consultant for them in the 3 months concluding 2013, getting ready to launch a new network of 120-plus golf course websites that would ultimately lead to some content known as the Billy Casper Digital Network. And while that all never panned out, in the very early stages, I was to go to the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, as I would annually, and spend some time with the executives, as well as some equipment and other purchasing partners, get to know them a little bit better, and try to lay some groundwork for potential content that we could do later in the year, which ultimately, in many ways, never manifested itself. However, I remember one of the days of the show, And I think it was the first day of the show on the floor, not the demo day. I was up on the third floor and had run into some new colleagues, people I didn't really know very well at all. But they said hi, and I think I even met a couple of people I'd never met before. And they were all around Mr. Casper. And Mr. Casper was sitting in a chair. He was resting. At that point in his life, he wasn't really able to stand up for very long or walk very far without assistance and without stopping. Just kind of the condition of being in your 80s, being a bigger man, and having some heart problems. So I introduced myself to him and said, "Very nice to meet you." And we're in a crowded convention center. The noise is very loud. It's hard to hear Billy Casper talking to me, answering whatever questions that I have. But we really didn't, it wasn't an interview. It wasn't a let's sit down and talk and record this conversation. It was a conversation between two men. One, an extraordinary champion. Another, a guy he'd never met, but knew might be okay because of an association with a company that bears his name, still bears his name, and will continue to bear his name. And we didn't really talk a lot about golf. It was a good mix in a half hour about life, golf, him, family, a little bit of religion. But the thing that really stood out to me about Mr. Casper is that as a man who won 51 times on the PGA Tour, he said to me several times, "No one really knows me. How is that possible? How could this have happened that a man with his record, with his resume, could believe for even the faintest of a moment that no one knows his story?" He wrote a book, The Big Three and Me. I'm looking at it on my desk as I record this, that outlines his story. It tells you what he wants you to know about him and his interaction with the greatest golfers of that generation. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, and himself, among others. But those four are the protagonists of the story. And I thought it very strange for him to say that to me. And I think I responded in kind, not quite understanding really what he was trying to tell me, but that my job was to try to help tell his story and try to kind of round it out as not only a great golf champion, but a humanitarian, a father, grandfather, great-grandfather, founding partner of Billy Casper Golf, and all of those things that maybe are a postscript to his professional career, but were absolutely important to know about Billy Casper the man. This is the first interaction. 30 minutes, he had to go have another meeting, an appearance, and shook his hand and said, I'll see you later. Later that week, might even have been later that day, Billy Casper Golf held a what amounted to a college job forum, college job fair, for folks who were in collegiate programs around the country specializing in golf course or golf management. And these were kids from all over the place. Florida, from Maryland, from Pennsylvania, Penn State, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore, Florida State, a bunch of other schools. They're all interacting in a room. And they're all 22 or less. So their lens through which they see golf is Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, maybe Phil Mickelson. And Mr. Casper comes and is introduced by Peter Hill, who's the CEO. And they have an interesting relationship, but nonetheless, it's a warm introduction. And Mr. Casper comes up with his help and Bobby Morris's help, who is his longtime agent. He comes up, and this is the first time I've seen him speak in public, and it's the first of four times I'll see him speak in public. And at least four times he'll speak in public. But four that I recall. And the thing that struck me right away is that, first of all, the kids who were in that room had no idea how great Billy Casper was and what he meant to the sport of professional golf. And I don't think he begrudged them that at all. It was in part his choosing, in part Mark McCormick's decisions that led to that result. But what really struck me is that Billy Casper stood in front of that room, and I'm pretty sure he didn't say anything for a good 30 seconds. He had a very magnanimous smile on his face. He let the applause kind of come in and close out. And he started kind of looking around before he said anything. And he's probably, he probably did that so many times in his life, delivering that kind of series of remarks to people who aspire to be in golf or who are already in golf through Billy Casper Golf or whatever. But the thing that he did that was so astounding to me was that his delivery was so inspired sounding. It almost sounded like the words were coming to him as he was saying it. And not in a way like I would speak here, like I'm ad-libbing and recalling, but almost like it was from above. And I know that's not the case. I'm not superstitious. I'm not really all that religious. But it really struck me that he felt every word that he said had meaning. There was no throwaway, like I'm wont to do. And the way he spoke so deliberately and with such great eye contact, it made you feel like he had custom crafted these words, every single one of them, just for you. And I'm sure he probably had done this 1,000 times over in his life, but it just seemed so unique to the situation. And it seemed awkward for those kids, because they didn't really know what was being said to them or who really was saying it. But I think it really resonated with them because of who was saying it and the way he delivered it. There were three other meetings, really, on behalf of Billy Casper Golf, where I had an opportunity to hear or converse with Mr. Casper. And the thing that I really, really liked is that he talked about family so much more as an important legacy to his life than golf. Because ultimately, we all fade away. We'll die. We're all going to leave this earth. Our legacy can be our professional one, but more likely, the more enduring one is the personal legacy. It is the company you keep, the family you raise, and the man or woman that you were, and that people will remember. And I think Mr. Casper had a very great grasp of that, and maybe part of that was realizing his own mortality, but part of that, I think, is also just the wisdom that I think he had, not only as a human being, but as a competitor, that made him so great, that fame is fleeting. Playing for fame or notoriety wasn't what worked for him. It was playing for his family to put food on the table in an era where if you didn't finish top 10, you lost money on the week. So winning was the only answer for a man with 5 children through his wife Shirley and 6 they adopted as a couple. Winning was a must. And he made that a habit, an incredible habit, because he worked hard and he found ways to revitalize himself in times when he needed it. He changed his diet to become healthier. He found ways to putt. He found ways to shape the ball. He developed a low draw and a high fade. He found shot shapes that he didn't otherwise think he needed, but it helped him become a better champion and a very durable one. He won 16 consecutive seasons on the PGA Tour. That's one behind the record shared by Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, and it's probably not a record we'll see broken in our lifetime, because it's that hard to win today. Not that it wasn't that hard then with those kinds of guys playing. There was a battery of 20 guys who could win in any given week, but it's even harder now, I think, because of more random players that can win. Nonetheless, an incredible mark. So, back to Mr. Casper talking about family over reputation, or professional reputation. The thing that really stood out to me about what he said, and the theme in so many of his remarks, first, a strong faith backed in Mormonism. And whatever you think of Mormonism, and I certainly had and have preconceived notions about Mormonism. However, there should be no preconceived notion, regardless of the influence, that makes you a good person. And for whatever reason, Mormonism made Billy Casper into a caring, magnanimous man who wanted to do good for others, by others, and wanted to be remembered for that more than anything else that he accomplished in the sport of golf. It's really important to remember. The other part that I really liked is that he emphasized decisions. And I think part of that had to do because of his son spending the rest of his life in a California penitentiary. Because he got caught up in the drug trade and was addicted to drugs and a victim of the three strikes you're out law in the state of California, where he will be incarcerated until he dies, unless that law changes. And I think for him, Mr. Casper, it made him further strengthen his belief in fate and decision points. That there are opportunities in your life that you may or may not know it at the time, but you should have an opportunity in them to do something that can change your life for the better. In some cases, for the worse. However, it is important to be able to step back, potentially recognize a situation as one of those big ones. As my friend Dr. Rob Bell says in his book, it only takes one. It's the hinge moment that the door swings upon to the next entryway, the next room in life. So Mr. Casper talked a lot about those. He talked about trying to figure him out and taking your time to get him right. And I think that is kind of the way that he lived his life. And you can see it in the way he speaks, the way he acted, the way he competed. He didn't press the issue all that often on the golf course. And you could kind of see a little subtle jab from Gary Player in his remembrance of Billy Casper, saying he was one of the greatest course managers of all time. And you can easily take that as a slight to say he was a lesser talent, but a great manager of it. You can kind of see that in how quarterbacks are evaluated if they win the Super Bowl. Were they a great quarterback that led their team, or were they some kind of game manager that just didn't cost their team a championship? I don't think Billy Casper was the game manager, so to speak. He had incredible game. The stories I heard from players and employees alike who witnessed his ability to put the ball in the hole from inside 100 yards is just awesome. There'd be another podcast of those if I could collect them all on a recording. But I think he was great because he understood moments. He understood, in life and in competition, those hinge moments where things can change. And that's why Billy Casper wasn't the most aggressive guy, but he was one of the most talented. And he won because of the combination of talent and not beating himself. He let you beat you. In the same way that Jack let people beat themselves, realizing that Nicholas was coming after them. Nicholas, I won't say feared, but revered Casper in that same way. And if he saw his name on the leaderboard, Nicholas did, then he was concerned. Casper wasn't going to beat Casper. And those are the kinds of decision points that happen in a golf tournament and throughout life that I think led to Billy Casper's point of view on the world. I also think he was the guy that didn't chase notoriety and didn't chase fame because he knew it was hollow. And he wanted something deeper in life, in part because he was the child of a broken marriage and didn't have his father in his life for the final 68 years of it, either by his volition or passing. For a lot of folks, that's really hard to deal with. Not having your dad in your life from a teenage years, the most formative years of your life, particularly for a man to not have his father. And then to go through raising a family, first getting married, having 5 children, adopting 6 others, to not have your father there for that is an example of what to do or a source of counsel when things just go wrong. That had to be really trying. And I'll never pretend to understand that. I'm very fortunate in that regard that I have my parents, my father, and even my in-laws as important people in my life as I become a better parent, and in my son's life as he becomes a toddler and will someday go to school and become a man, and all of those things that you go through in life. So I guess what I want people to take away from Billy Casper isn't all the headlines that are out there. He's golf's most underappreciated, underrated champion. He was underappreciated. Underrated, as Mr. Nicholas said, I don't think so. Because, as he put it, the people who played against Billy Casper knew how good Billy Casper was. It's the people who chose not to pay attention to how good he was that didn't understand, didn't appreciate it. So it's their loss, not his. Not Arnold Palmer's loss, who, by the way, never really agreed with Billy Casper in terms of lifestyle, but the 1961 Ryder Cup, they were damn good together. They made it work. They found a way to get along. And I don't think that's necessarily something that really happens on the PGA Tour today. You guys will find a way to get along. They make enough money, they can form their own cliques, they can have their own friends come out, they can have their own posse. They don't need other people. There's not a unity sense to it. The sense of family is different. I'm not going to say it's absent, but it's different than that era. But what people should know about Billy Casper is that he was grateful to have been a champion. Grateful to have carved an amazing life out for himself, his wife, and his kids. And given them opportunities that, without golf, he probably would never have been able to enjoy. However, Billy Casper also would have been a great man were he not a golfer. He would have probably made a very similar set of decisions, personally speaking, had he never put a club in his hand, had he never become one of golf's most prolific champions. And that makes him really unique, I think, because opportunities change people, opportunities change their point of view. Wealth, notoriety changes their point of view, makes them tired, makes them wary, makes them cynical. I don't think that happened to Billy Casper. I think he went through the rise of being a golf champion. He also went through the low of a fading champion from the mid-70s really to the late 80s. And it had gotten to the point after his senior days, the Champions Tour days were done, where he wasn't much of a factor in anyone's golf conversation, and his life was starting to change toward that of an ordinary person. He was struggling with that. But he found a way to rehabilitate his life, professionally speaking, become a part of this course management firm that is now the largest domestically in the United States, and found his calling later in life as a guy who's not only an incredible humanitarian, but could deliver incredible words to people. And he was honored by the PGA of America with their Distinguished Service Award. He's a World Golf Hall of Famer. He's an all-time great human being. I'm sad that he's gone. I'm sad that, as he told me, people didn't really know him. So I hope people will get a chance to know him in his death, maybe read his book and understand his perspective on life a little bit better. But I'm incredibly grateful to have spent even a little bit of time with the man, and people who spent even more time with him, because I don't think I would have been able to appreciate the man and his death without the people who got to experience the beauty of his life. That's going to do it for us this week on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Next week we'll come up with something to talk about, probably the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, maybe how the first tee is kind of a failure, but we're digging into that a little bit more, so it may take a little time before we have that conversation. But until next time, thanks for listening. Please email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com, with your thoughts, and if you have some memories of meeting or spending time with Billy Casper, or Charlie Sifford for that matter, please send them to us. We'd love to read them and converse with you over email. Until next time, I'm Ryan Belge saying thanks for listening to the 19th Hole Golf Show. We'll see you next week.